black high top Converse.
No way.
I threw those out. Also, there was another box.
You're wiping your brow like something scary just happened.
No, I'm just getting ready.
Unlock the doorway to infinity. Turn the key and step through. You are the product of infinite possibility. Your only limits are those of your imagination, and if you can imagine reality, then you can build the path to another life.
That quote, as read by my wife, Carol, is from page 12 of a book called The Incredible Being by Samuel Badeley. This book was found in a storage unit in Boston, Massachusetts. And merely mentioning the existence of this book in my last episode inspired a communication. That communication has once again made me question everything. You're listening to the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 6, Requiem. Something I didn't mention in my last episode is that The Incredible Being by Samuel Badeley smells like mildew. While it's in fairly good condition, it was clearly in storage for a long time. As for the content, the book seems to be a collection of daily thoughts. I wouldn't say they were normal thoughts. In fact, all 100 of its pages are dedicated to statements, like the one my wife just shared. They are like daily affirmations. As I flip through the book, page after page presents these meandering ponderings about life. One page in particular caught my eye, only because the words were not written by Samuel Badeley, but rather they are attributed to the poet William Blake. I'm going to read this time. This is a quote from page 46. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. This appears to be the only time in the whole book someone else is quoted. So I looked up William Blake. He was born in London in 1757. He is considered a visionary, a leading figure in the history of poetry, and a shaper of visual aesthetic in the Romantic Age. Also of note, his contemporaries referred to him as a lunatic. At a young age, Blake believed he was visited by people from impossibly distant lands. He called them angels. And on his deathbed, an observer later explained, "I have been at the death of not a man, but of a blessed angel." This quote from The Incredible Being comes from a work called The Marriage of Heaven and Hell, which Blake completed in the early 1790s. An overall theme of the work is that progression in life is impossible without contrary obstacles, and that all humankind is a reflection of light and darkness. Much of Blake's work shares the same theme and even some of the same words as many of the passages found in the rest of Samuel Badeley's book. I noticed that many of the passages in The Incredible Being include references to doors, light, darkness, and the concept of infinity. For the past few months, we have explored some strange paths together. I have tried to be as transparent as I can about my intentions. I'm still trying to reply to all of your messages. One listener, Jordan Smith of South Carolina, he usually has far-out theories, but he also asked why I have not checked in with my younger sister, Talia. he correctly calculated that Talia was still in school when Alistair disappeared. Well, I did contact her. But she didn't remember much more than what Jessica Morlick told me, so I featured her instead. The truth is that Talia and I aren't very close. It isn't a secret. Back before college, when we were both still in Barton, Talia started dating my best friend. After that ended, none of us were friends anymore. Let's just say it was a bit of teenage drama that we never fully recovered from. When Talia moved to the West Coast, that was sort of it. We're fine, by the way. It's been decades since we were fighting. She's married and happy now. We both are. People just grow apart, I guess. After I posted my last episode, I received that communication. The message was brief. Basically, it was a woman demanding a phone conversation. I replied with my number. Within the hour, I got this message.
Hello, my name is Calista Kira. I have some questions for you about your show. Let's just say I knew the author of The Incredible Being. Please call me at...
I called her back. Her story was initially a story I had heard before. A friend contacted her after hearing the podcast. She listened to an episode or two and was possessed to call. Except her story immediately took a left turn.
Who are you? What are you trying to do here? Listening to your podcast made me physically ill. I'm going to call a lawyer.
I thought she was going to hang up. But I talked her into staying on the line. She mentioned something that blew my mind. It took a bit of talking through what my program was trying to do, but she calmed down enough that I eventually got her to let me record again. Listen to this.
We were married and separated in 1978. Afterward, I basically never heard from him again until I was directed to your show, or whatever you call it.
And you absolutely believe that Sam Glamis is your ex-husband?
You have no idea, do you? Sam Glamis? Glamis? I was married to him, except that he was Sam Badley. He's absolutely the same person. Glamis? It's where I met him.
Glamis is a place?
It's a castle. It's spelled Glamis, but it's pronounced Gloms. I was studying abroad in Scotland. I met Sam on the castle grounds, and we sat together on the train. Except that he was Sam Badley. He was a suave guy. Older. Maybe 10 years older than I was.
What was he doing there?
Meditating. That was his thing. He said he traveled the world finding interesting places for meditation. He'd just come from Russia. He said he meditated in the Red Square.
He sounds so different than the guy I've heard about who lived in the woods.
For a while, he was amazing. When I met him, it seemed like he'd been everywhere. Our romance was a whirlwind. Sounds like he had a sick obsession with our short time together.
And you married him?
I don't know what else to think.
And the divorce. Do you mind me asking how that went down?
We never made the marriage legally official. We did it in secret. It only lasted a few months. My year abroad ended, and he wanted me to drop everything and travel with him. I just couldn't. I went back home. I never saw Sam again. When did he die?
Last year sometime. He died of cancer. So you had no idea he was living in New Hampshire with his son?
That's the most upsetting part. Alistair is my son's name.
Alistair was your son?
No, Alistair is my son. He's 19 years old. He's a student at NYU.
Sam named his son before you named your son.
I must have told him.
Told him what?
That I always wanted a son named Alistair.
Would you mind if I called your son?
This question was a step too far. I regret it even now. Needless to say, Calista did not respond well.
He never met Sam. He doesn't know anything about any of this. Just leave my family out of this.
And there you have it. Just as a door opens, it closes. I've had moments of regret during the making of this podcast. Sometimes I fear that I'm just being a voyeur into the lives of private people. After speaking with Callista, I had a really bad feeling about the whole thing. I decided to sit down with my wife and assess the whole situation.
I'm just afraid that I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to find anything, and I'm going to leave all these listeners hanging. I hate when stories have no clear ending, even true stories.
I mean, after all these weeks, do you really think you're not getting anywhere? It's crazy stuff that you've uncovered that has to be counted as progress. Just think. You have a record collection now.
Very funny. If anything, then now I have a timeline, a sequence of events.
Okay. Talk me through it.
Sam Bately meets a young woman named Callista who's studying abroad in Scotland. They have a whirlwind romance that presumably he can never quite let go of. By the end of his life, he's moved to the Great Northern Woods, having changed his name to the place where he first met Callista. And he named his son Alistair, a name Callista told him she always wanted to name her own son. Anyway, he lives out his years in New Hampshire, and at some point he writes a book. It doesn't really add up.
Sometimes life doesn't add up. What questions do you still have?
Who is Alistair's mother? What turns Sam Glamis, or Sam Bately, rather, into a recluse living off the grid, raising his son in the middle of nowhere? And then, why was his son recording everything, and how did Alistair get me to sound like I was saying all those things about murder? And finally, what caused Alistair to disappear? I can't just stop.
Don't stop. Consider just taking a breath. Make it so you stop spinning your wheels, then come back fresh.
After talking to Carol, I decided that she was right. Carol is always right. After this episode, I'll be taking a 1 month break from the program. This isn't good night or even good eventide. I return in 4 weeks. Make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss me when I return. And in the meantime, I'll still answer your emails and messages. Every single one of them. When I come back, I'll hopefully have a new perspective. Maybe I'll have made sense of it all. Before I sign off, there's more to this episode. The following conversation happened, and frankly, I can't wait 4 weeks for you to hear this. This next call was from my audio engineer friend, Tom Allegost.
Are you recording?
Yes, I'm recording.
Are you familiar with Mozart's Requiem?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I mean, I might recognize it if I heard it.
When I last spoke with Tom, he had taken the additional records recovered from the storage unit to his studio in order to make sure that, now that we had everything in quadruplicate, the sounds were all the same from LP to LP.
Come on, man, this is like the best thriller in music history. Okay, Mozart was commissioned to write a piece for a rich royal dude so that the guy could pass off the piece as his own honor to his wife. Mozart had written 2/3 of it when his health failed, and he told his own wife that he was writing the Requiem for himself.
So what happened?
He died. He was only 35. He knew he was dying, so he wrote his own Requiem.
What does this have to do with anything?
I think these records were Alistair's Requiem. It's like a strange compilation of his last years of life smashed together. He was secretly recording things around him because he knew that he was, you know, I think he knew he was going to disappear.
But why the copies? I guess it would make sense if they were being sent to different people, but all the copies have my name on them.
They're not copies.
What?
They're different. That's why I called you, but get this, they're mostly the same. I isolated a few of the voices I uncovered from the originals. The same voices are there. Alistair's voice is there, your voice is there, but you say slightly different things. It's four different variations on a theme. It sounds like the title of a masterpiece, right?
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in a sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say,
so that's it. Keep in mind that there are so many other records we haven't even begun to look into. I edited out this part, but when I first started this podcast, Tom told me some of the record slipcase covers I gave him were linked to some very rare albums. Since the actual albums weren't inside, I didn't think it was important to mention, but I will post a full list of the album covers I now own. I suppose now that I own everything in quadruplicate, I might be able to part with a few to fund this project. Over the next few weeks, I will really be listening for your theories. This is a mystery. I need help. I need your help to solve it. In the meantime, if you're connected with Alistair Glamis in any way and wish to share, or if you want to explore this project's companion materials, then please visit my website at disappearancepodcast.com. This project is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Thanks to Tom Allegost, Callista Kira, and my wife Carol for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Prom Queen, Ben von Wildenhaus, and Rudy Sims for providing the music. Thanks also to Jeremy Murphy, Erica Kestenbaum-Skoglund, and Jordan Smith for the support. Let's talk in 4 weeks. Partners in Crime Media.